2-minute meditation starts now. God.
Morning, I'm Tarek, I'm an addict.
Tarek.
All right. Home stretch. So the 12th step, as it reads on the board, says, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of the steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics and addicts and to practice these principles in all our affairs. So embedded in that step, you have the three legacies. So having had a spiritual awakening as the result of the steps is recovery. Try to carry this message to alcoholics, that's service, and to practice these principles in all our affairs, that's unity. And the step sometimes seems to get latched on to sponsorship and sponsorship alone. And although sponsorship and working with others is vital, it's not all of the 12th step. And I wish we had more time this morning so we could focus on the practicing the principles in all our affairs, because that's just as important. But it seems to sometimes get left off on Sunday morning. So the chapter working with others in the big book, it's not truly about sponsorship. It's about how to make a 12-step call, and they chop it up into two visits, and they have a bunch of questions and suggestions on how to handle a person that may or may not have a problem with drinking or drugs. On page 89, it says, practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking and using as intensive work with other alcoholics and other addicts. It works when other activities fail. This is our 12th suggestion. Carry this message to other alcoholics and addicts. You can help when no one else can. You can secure their confidence when others fail. Remember, they are very ill. Life will take on new meaning. To watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends. This is an experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives. So that's a promise there. And it's a promise that's come true in my experience. But there's this word that we need to talk about. It's the message. What is the message? And prior to the fourth edition, I'm not sure if they did this in every third edition, but there is something I want to read to you that used to be on the dust cover of the big book. Let us see. Third edition dust cover. The basic text, pages 1 through 164, remain unchanged. This is the AA message, just as it was introduced in the 1939 Alcoholics Anonymous, the book that gave the Young Fellowship its name. So as you go through these chapters, and the rest of the chapters after working with others, chapter 2, wives, family afterward, the 2 employers, and a vision for you, they spent a lot of time talking about other situations and how to live this way of life in those situations, i.e. practice principles in all your affairs. So that's the message we're trying to carry, which is living the way of life described in the big book. And you can do that incredibly well when you sponsor people. That's a wonderful way to do it. But Brandon and I are carrying the message this weekend. We're not sponsoring any of you guys. We're trying to sell you on the program of recovery. When I get to my home group, or I mean, almost any meeting I go to, when I get there 30 minutes before the meeting starts. And then I typically stay 30 minutes after the meeting, because that's the way I grew up in Alcoholics Anonymous and Cocaine Anonymous. And as a result of that, I have opportunities to discuss the way of life described in the book. Some aspect of it will come up in conversation. It happens very often. And it's happened several times this weekend outside of the sessions. And so that is another way to carry the message. Helping put on events, weekend events, area meetings, district meetings, speaker meetings. That is also a form of carrying the message when you participate at that, because you are a symbol to people that are in early recovery of what is important, you know, what we do here. You know, everything we do is focused on the fifth tradition, in my opinion, which, you know, we carry the message to the alcoholic or addict who still suffers. And so in order to do that, service work ends up being, you know, anything that helps facilitate the carrying of the message, which becomes an extension of carrying the message. I'm not trying to talk to you out of sponsorship. I'm trying to circle back to what I started the weekend with, was you need to find ways to make yourself useful. I highly encourage you, if you want to drink the Kool-Aid that's available to you in Alcoholics Anonymous and the whatever 12-step fellowship you're in that uses the big book, start sponsoring people. And here and there, once in a while, you're going to watch one of the guys you're working with have a transformational experience, and you're going to, as a result of being involved in that process, you'll get to witness the regenerative power of God. And it'll be proof and evidence that this thing works. I received proof and evidence that this works when I was in my fifth step, when I was making amends, after I started praying and meditating. But the most thunderous and resounding proof and evidence is I've gotten a chance to sponsor some guys and be in their lives since they first showed up. And, you know, when I spend time with them or talked with them, and it doesn't happen all the time, but as I'm communicating with them, I start having this collection of thoughts of who I'm talking to now and who I met X amount of time ago. And then my awareness is drawn to the power of God, because that's the only thing that can explain the transformation for me. And as a result of being active for years of sponsoring guys and carrying the message, I've had a fellowship grow up about me, the fellowship that I crave. As a result, some of my closest friends are men that I have sponsored for a long time. So the steps, they're not a linear set of steps. They're laid out in a circle. Because for years, you know, I went to meetings and I'd hear them say, the newcomer is the most important person in the room, and everybody's gung ho, and that's why we're here to help the newcomer. But then about 3 or 4 years in, I realized that, well, let's assume that the newcomer is the lifeblood of the program. Well, blood has to have a heart to pump through. The heart in our program are those of us that are engaged in the 12-step work, reaching our hands out, being responsible when someone needs help. So it completes the circle. Another way that it completes the circle is when I'm working my 12th step, I get to stare at my first step. I had a guy in the office. He came up to me last Tuesday night after the meeting, got my phone number outside. It was clear that he wanted me to sponsor him. And I said to him, look, man, I don't say yes when people ask me to sponsor them. What I do is I set up a meeting, and then we're going to get to know each other. And then I'm going to tell you what it's going to look like if I'm your sponsor. And then I'm going to give you some time to think about it. Then you can call me and tell me if that's what you want. And so he came over to the shop on Thursday. We sat down and we visited. And I did what's on page 94, which is I outlined the program of action for him. I think it's 94. Yep. I go through this paragraph and I explain to him everything we're going to do, what I expect of him. And then I say, look, man, this is a big deal. This is a big commitment. You know, I will tell guys, look, you know, sometimes I'll let guys, you know, if they relapse, I'll continue working with them. But most of the time when a guy relapses, he's going to have a consequence because he's not going to operate with impunity. So what I do is I'll go find him another sponsor. But one of the consequences of his actions is he's not going to get to work with me anymore. You know, that's just something I learned along the way. You know, and then I will give them some time to think about it. And for every 10 guys that I do that exercise with, I may have said this earlier in the weekend, more than half of them don't call. So I just saved myself a bunch of time, right? I used to just say yes. Anyone that asked me, yes, 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 I'll take you through the steps. I think there was a lot of ego involved in that for me. There's such a profound identity with the sponsor and playing that role. And so he called me. I asked him to call. Well, I gave him, I said, you got up to 3 days. I said, but if you know your decision is this is what you want to do, then just call me tomorrow. And he said, he turns to me, he goes, I'll call you tomorrow at 1 o'clock. And what time did he end up calling me?
4:30.
He ended up calling me at 4:30, but he said the words that I wanted to hear. I'm ready to go through with the program. That comes straight out of this chapter, working with others. And so we'll start meeting him. I'm going to take him through the book. All right, take him through the book. And hopefully I'll excite him about the possibilities that are available to him if he actually begins to try to live the life outlined in the book. But one of the things I'm probably going to share with him, as it eventually was shared with me, is that the 12 steps that he's going to learn to work with me are not the work. So the real work in Alcoholics Anonymous and Cocaine Anonymous are taking other people through the steps. Not when you go through the steps. When you go through the steps, you're getting prepared to do the real work. And that comes from the forward to the second edition. You know, intensive work with one alcoholic working with another or one addict with another is vital for permanent recovery. You know, I love the example Brandon gave last night about the duct tape and the leak, because that was so, I mean, it just brought it to life, right? But what I've seen over the years is most people just want to stop the leak with some duct tape. They don't want to put the effort in. You know, they don't want to cut out the pieces and get the unions and get the new pieces and glue everything together and make sure it works and turn the water off and then turn it back on. They just do not want to do that. And I think they do, and they're unaware that they don't. It's really sad to watch. But that's the work and self-sacrifice that Bill Wilson talks about in his story. In his story, Bill says, if the alcoholic or the addict fails to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others, he will not survive the certain trials and low spots ahead. They promised us trials and low spots. My experience says your life has trials and low spots. And I don't know where I'd be if I had not been immersed in all three parts of our program, recovery, unity, and service. I do think there is a connection with how my life has unfolded and the amount of time that I have spent trying to carry the message. There's a lot of people, you'll hear a common phrase that says, you can't keep what you get, what you have, unless you give it away. You can't get it unless you give it away. There will be no attaining if you don't give it away. I heard a guy say that last year, and one of those things that imprints on your psyche immediately because it was the truth, right? It was a universal truth. Truly, I don't believe we get anything until we give it away. And so I want to read something out of another spiritual book, because this is sort of going to talk about the first step and the 12th step. One of the impacts of meeting a guide, we'll call it a guide, one who's on a higher rung on the ladder of spiritual or conscious evolution, is the awakening of remorse and repentance inside of you. A meeting with such a magnetic center can have, if one is ripe for the experience, a dramatic effect on one's psyche. Questions begin to grab a hold of that person that won't let go. What have I done with my life? How have I messed it up so carelessly? How have I given up that which is most sacred in me? How did I neglect the noble function which is my true birthright? So those questions, in some form, I think, land on a new person. And I think it's imperative that you have somebody that can help share their experience, because we all go through all of that. And so, if you think about it, when you go to see someone's gravestone, it has their birth date and then it has their expiration date, correct? For alcoholics and addicts, I think sometimes our birthstone should go like this. Like for me, it's going to have October 12th, 1976. But then it's going to have November 5th, 2007. And then eventually it's going to have my expiration date. And what a man posed to me years ago is he asked, what are you doing with your dash? Right? And I think if you can, for whatever reason, I was able to connect the dots of how important it was to carry the message. It was one of the one dots that was very clear to me when I got here, that I had to work my way through this process as quickly as possible and start sponsoring people, because I didn't think there was a chance in hell I was going to stay clean. You know, and I had just landed in a boiling kettle of big book thumpers, and that's all they preach. Work with others, work with others, work with others. And that's what I started doing. But then it was very rewarding, and it was a lot of fun. And it changed my perspective on the existence of God, really. And my first double digit, I can't remember how many, 10, 11, 12, 13 guys I tried to take through the big book. It wasn't until I ran across John that he was the first one I took through all 12 steps. And he was in the double digits. And I'm still, you know, we're still in each other's lives to this day. I'm not a sponsor anymore, but he's sober today and we stay in touch. And it was an awesome experience to take someone through all 12 steps. But, you know, I've watched a lot of people, and I don't know, this doesn't have to be your experience, but they go through the steps. They make a few amends. By this time, they're maybe 6-7 months sober, And they want to turn around and start going back through the steps again. They want to find somebody. I had a guy walk up to me and ask me this about a month ago. And I said, how long are you sober? Why do you want to go back through the steps? And I said, are you trying to avoid doing the real work and just put the focus back on yourself? Because the real work, once you go through the steps, is 9, 10, 11, and 12. And sacrifice, like, you know, when I have sponsees come over to my place on a Saturday morning or a Sunday morning, and even sometimes when they come by the shop, to some degree, it's always an inconvenience, to some degree. Sometimes it's a high degree of inconvenience, other times it's not. But there's always a sliver of me that, oh, man, I wish I could be doing something else right now. That's readily supplanted with the idea that I have to carry this message as it was carried to me. Because the men that took me through this process, they told me that I didn't owe them anything, that I only owed the new person. And that's what I've walked with for almost 12 years, is I owe it to you guys. I don't owe the guys that took me through this process anything. As a result of that, I've been given a pretty full life. I think it's connected to the amount of time I've sacrificed to help other people. But here's the double-edged sword. I lost a marriage behind all the time that I gave to people in the program and carrying the message. And so that's quite bewildering to know that something that was valuable and that I treasured for a long time, but I no longer treated it like a treasure, was taken away from me by my own fault, because I didn't see that. You know, I thought I had to save the world, man. Anytime AA comes calling, we say yes. Now, relationships die behind that belief that you have to say yes to every AA or CA commitment. That's crap. You need to find a place where you can be considerate. You know, let me think about that. Let me look at my calendar. Let me talk to my family. Let me get back to you. You know, by the time I woke up to that, it was too late. Even though I gave it lip service, but my conversation with Marcy was not asking her if we had anything going on, was trying to talk her into it every single time. You know, convince her that, man, this world is just going to be better off if I go to this conference and talk. You know, if I have to sponsor four guys. This fourth guy, he was just speaking to me outside the meeting, right? I'm the only one that can help him. You know, these days I'm a matchmaker a lot of the time. And matchmaking is a form of carrying the message too. I'll run into somebody, I 12-step them, I get to know them for, you know, a half hour. I was like, you know what? This guy would be a good fit with this guy. Let me put them together and see what happens. And then I'm still involved. I make myself available. I tell the guys, hey, man, you know me now. I'm in your network. Just call me. Most don't, but some do. And so this morning, that's what I wanted to really talk to you about, is those questions that I just read are going to come up. What have I done with my life? Because addiction and alcoholism, they strip us of our humanity. And part of this is regaining our humanity, regaining a place in society, being a productive member of society, but not forgetting where we came from. We were taken to the gates of insanity and death, and we were brought back to tell a story. Our story gets told more often than not when you work with someone. When you sit down and you share experience, strength, and hope, recovery begins. That's what we're about here. And if you don't have a desire inside to help people in that way, to carry the message, especially if you fit the description of the alcoholic or the addict in the big book, which means you're a low bottom, you're a type 4, I mean, you have no option but to work with others if you want to stay clean and sober, because you have to look at your first step on a regular basis, right? Because one of the things last Tuesday when he was sitting in my office is he was sharing some experiences with me that I was having 11 years and almost 8 months ago. 11 years, 8 months ago, I had some stuff going on that was similar to this guy. And like what happened was, I notice a part of me say to myself, I'm willing to do whatever I have to do to never be where this guy's at ever again. And that happens to me on a regular basis when I'm working with a new person. He's got nothing I want. I'm going to make sure I do everything I have to do to never have what he's got. It may sound harsh. It's a form of protection for me. So I don't know what happens to me if I completely abandon sponsorship. My desire to sponsor has decreased exponentially. What that looks like for Tara, because I still have three guys I'm actively taking to the staffs. All right, instead of six or seven. So I think that's where I'm going to end the weekend. You guys have been a wonderful group. You've been very attentive. The questions in between have been wonderful. And hopefully we'll see you again next year, perhaps. Maybe. Maybe not. Who knows? We just don't know.
Hopefully
not. Oh, I take that back. Yes. I hope I don't see you guys here next year. Anyway, thanks so much for having me.
Yeah. Has anybody ever seen the movie Contact?
Yeah.
So there's a question posed in that movie. That is, do you think that there's more life out there? And the answer was, well, it sure would seem like a big waste of space if not, right? So I say that to read this little quote. This is out of Conversations with God, Book 4. The difference between human cultures and the civilizations of highly evolved beings is that highly evolved beings actually apply the law of reciprocity in their lives rather than just giving it lip service. Sounds a lot like sponsorship, right? Actually returning to others what you've been given. It also says, look, yours is a very young species. You are like children. You are the toddlers of the universe. So you go around doing things that you know are not good for you because it seems like more fun in the moment. Or you simply forget what you've been told. This is the story of your species' collective experience on Earth. You've let it be your experience as an individual too. Even though you know better, you're not just observing non-beneficial behaviors in others. You're actually engaging in such behaviors yourself. But now it will be beneficial for you to set aside your childish behaviors. Struggle. Life acquires meaning when we face the conflict between our desires and reality. We all have differing personalities vying for predominance in our lives. Some come out at just the right moment. At other times, our aspirations and our fondest hopes find little support in our environment. Only a few can truly say that they are living their lives exactly according to their desires. For the majority of us, life is a series of conflicts between our inner ideas and outer constrictions. How will we test ourselves against the flexing of external circumstances? Goals are important. Forbearance is also important. But the very process of struggle is equally essential. Rice must undergo the hardship of a pounding in order to become white. Steel must endure the forge in order to become strong. Adversity is the tempering of one's metal. Without it, we cannot know any true meaning in our accomplishments. Of course, when things happen without struggle, it does not mean that we did not deserve it. A musician may compose a brilliant piece in one afternoon. An artist will dash off a masterpiece in a single sitting. A writer will write significant passages as if they were dictated. Each might say it happened so fast. But in reality, it took all of them years of dedication and struggle to come to that moment of climax. Thus, even the virtuoso performance is the tip of a lifetime of struggle, and the gem of meaning is set in the metal of long perseverance. So there's a lot of you that are sitting in here in circumstances that you didn't like, didn't pick, regret, have shame over. Yes. This is all good. So I'm going to give everybody in here a gift right now that you're going to remember for the rest of your life. You guys want it? Simple gift. The people that joined me this morning, I almost guarantee you will make it. The people that did not, probably won't. Okay? Here's the gift. What's going on inside you right now? Thoughts or words or feelings. Throw them out.
Peace.
Relaxed.
Comfort.
What's that?
Comfort.
Offended. Offended? Right? Come on, throw it out. What are you feeling?
You don't really sum up whether I stay sober or not, sorry.
Okay, what else?
Okay.
What else?
Defeated.
Okay.
Judged.
Okay.
Determination.
Okay.
Driven.
Okay.
Here, here.
The only purpose of that statement was for you guys to look inside. That's it. I don't know if that statement's true. I don't know what some of the other people had going on this morning. I don't know what was going on. I don't know. You know, maybe you just needed a morning. Maybe we've worn your ass out and you needed some time. Maybe you had fire watch. I mean, that's another thing. I usually try to acknowledge those people. So thank you, fire watch people. Thankless job during these weekends. It absolutely is. But the gift is, how often do we experience something that somebody says and we never look at what's going on? We never see it. We never acknowledge it. I appreciate the people that spoke up that were pissed off at me and that felt judged or felt like I had a God complex or any of those things. Thank you. You observed it. That's the gift. The statement may be true, it may not be true. It doesn't matter. What is it to you? Will it be the thing that drives you to make sure you prove me wrong? If so, I won. So did you. If you let that statement defeat you, you're weak anyways. Go get hurt some more. Get strong. You know, when you actually break a bone, the place that's broken, when it heals, is stronger than the rest of the bone. Not so much for joints, because those have a lot of different moving parts, but an actual bone that's broken, the place where it breaks is stronger when it heals. Just curious, what heals the bone? What heals the bone? Okay.
Cells.
Yourself.
Who?
Yourself.
Yes. Yourself. Your body knows how to fix itself. The doctor sets the bone, puts it in a cast. Nothing else happens except for the body, mind, tells itself to heal itself. You don't do it. You don't wake up every morning and go, heal, 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 heal. But all the cells in your body get together. They say, okay, what are we supposed to do? We're supposed to do this. So it knows. So if your body can heal a bone that's broken, can it heal your mind? Can it heal a sickness? You'll never know if you don't learn what's going on inside. The gift is inside. The gift is in your thoughts. It's in the realization of things. It's in honestly saying that you believe somebody is that or isn't that, and have a willingness to change it. It is through that experience of practicing the principles that my life has transformed. Sponsorship is really, really cool because you get to see other people through the help of some sort of force that nobody really understands what it is, go through a healing. For those of you that think that the stuff that you've been through isn't important and could have no value to anybody else, you're wrong. I was 6 months sober, did a 12-step call. That line in the 9-step promises that says, we'll see how our experience can benefit others, no matter how far down the scale we have gone. I pick up a guy from a hotel because he needs a place to stay before he can get into a halfway house on Monday. And I'm 6 months sober. I really don't really know what I'm doing. I send a text to a bunch of people and ask what I should do. Read a little bit through working with others. Pick the guy up. I start telling him my story. Tell him about the divorce, the two kids that I hardly get to see, the bankruptcy, multiple foreclosures, the failed business, 8 jobs in 6 years, the internal loathing, all that stuff. And as I'm telling him the stories, he's dipping his head further and further into his lap. And I really think he's getting ready to get sick in the floorboard of my car. But he's going through this internal struggle. And I finish telling the story and I say, now you tell yours. And he says, I don't have to. You just told it to me. Literally everything I had been through, other than maybe we were in different lines of work, this guy had been through. And it's like, he tells me it. And it's like, no shit. Because I wasn't wanting to share some of that stuff with him because I was embarrassed about it. But he had it all, every last bit of it. So it's the struggle of my life that was beneficial to this guy. Now, I wish I could tell you that he stayed sober. He didn't really want to commit to this way of life. He just wanted shit to calm down for a little bit. And he's relapsed multiple. At one point in time, before I met him, he had like 20 years. Can't tell you how many times I've seen somebody relapse after time, just never put it back together. Wouldn't it be cooler to just never relapse at all? Wouldn't it be cool to just come in, adopt this way of life, and have it become a way of life, and just never go back? You can do that. That's my story. One time, came in. I guess I was beat enough. If I really look at it, I think that I was so naive and dumb all these years prior that I never saw that it was a problem until everything was wrecked. And then it was like, huh, this is weird. Maybe I should do something different. And then I've stayed. People think relapse has to happen in order for you to get to the bottom. It's not my story. One time. One white chip. Been here ever since. Don't see it stopping, to tell you the truth. Have no desire to go back. My Thursday night and Friday morning of this week were wonderful. I sat across from a bunch of people at the bar on Friday night. I ate dinner at this bar because I really like their food. I like to actually sit at the bar because then I don't take up multiple seats. And these people are all getting hammered, carrying on, and I have no desire to join them. None. And then I go to breakfast the next morning, and I've sat at the counter, and there's four cooks right across. There's this guy's got this station, there's two grill stations, and there's the prep guy. And the prep guy, I don't know if he was still fucked up, if he was coming down, if he was hungover. I don't know what was going on, but you could just tell. It was on him. He was struggling in the morning. Maybe he stayed up all night and just couldn't put it together. And the girl next to him that received, he preps all the stuff, and he was getting like one out of four of the preps right. And she's just like, whatever his name is, we'll say Jim. Jim, it's the beginning of the summer. We can't have this. You're killing us. And so he's struggling. He's not slamming the plates down, but he's putting them down heavier than usual. You know, he's just, and I'm watching this guy, and I thank God for the experience of observing this guy struggle. Because I had so many mornings that were that way. Just couldn't, like, giving her all she's got, Captain. You know, like calling down to the engine room, I need more power. And it's like, that's it. It's all we got. I need to think more. I need to think harder. We can't. There's nothing there. But I have this experience of, I don't know if anybody's ever seen the movie Vanilla Sky. Tom Cruise movie where this guy has this moment in his life where he splices a new life into it. And other than the reality seems to be the same, the new life resembles the old life not at all. I love the movie because I think that's what I used to love the movie before I got sober because I thought it was a really cool concept. I like it even more now because I'm pretty certain that happened to me. The existence that I participate in today only partially resembles the existence that I used to exist in. My kids are still in it. My family's still in it. I still carry around a resume that looks like my old resume. That's about it. It's completely new. In Luke, it says that you cannot be my disciple unless you hate your father, mother, brother, sister, and even your own life. And I think that what that means is that you've got to get to the place where, in order for you to actually want to seek God, you have to be just so tired of the way stuff was. Practicing the principles in all our affairs to me means the guy that you see here, if you actually came and hung out with me, is the same guy. The guy you see in a meeting, the guy you see operating in a business setting, same guy. And a gift was given to me by our mentor, Don Pritz, when he said that if everybody likes you, you're a phony anyways. Because you can't satisfy everybody all the time. You can't. But if I'm me, and the best version of me that I can be, some of you might like me. Others of you won't. Cool. The good news for me today is that's okay to me. You don't have to like me. I don't need you to like me. The people I want to like me in my life like me. I picked up somewhere along the line this idea that If I was mysterious, I would be interesting. I think it was a James Bond kind of thing or something like that. Nobody really knew that guy. He had that secret alter ego. And so I tried to make sure that nobody really ever got to know me. And thought that I was doing a pretty good job. My wife knew a different person than the people at work, knew a different than the guys that hung out with me. Nobody ever got the whole story because it made me mysterious and somewhat interesting. Or so I thought. But, you know, it's exactly the opposite today for me, is that it turns out that the more interested I become in my life, the more engaged I become in my life, the more open I am with the things that I share and say and do. There's not much I don't share with anybody that asks. You want to judge me for it? Cool. That's on you, not on me. Because I'm so content in my life and what I have and what I'm doing, I found that it makes me interesting. People enjoy talking to me about different things because I'm interested in different things. So these ideas that I carried around my entire life were wrong. I love being wrong nowadays, unless I don't love being wrong when there's an amend associated with it, because for some reason my mind still holds on to this idea that I'm still right all the time and that I can't ever be wrong when it comes to interactions with other people. But the learnings of life, the evolution of my life, is one of when I find out there's something that I thought was true that isn't true, cool. Now I don't have to carry that around anymore. But again, the biggest element of that is that I'm aware of what's going on in my internal space. I'm probably, for some of you, more aware of what's going on with you than even you know. Because I watch stuff. I learned something about Tarek about 10 minutes ago that I didn't know. I think your thoughts line up over here on the right side of your head too, just by some of the signals that you were given and the things you were saying. I don't know if you knew that you were doing it, but I'm watching going, oh, look at that. That's where his come in. That's where his conversations happen. I became interested in life. I walk around in a way where I genuinely hope that I can give back to the people I come in contact with. Giving back sometimes comes in the form of saying something that challenges them. I've pissed some people off in here this weekend, but it's with the purpose of love. I only want your best life for you. If I have to piss you off to give you your best life, yay, I won. So did you. Each man has his own vocation. The talent is the call. There is one direction in which all space is open to him. He has faculty silently inviting him thither to an endless exertion. He is like a ship in a river. He runs against obstruction on every side but one. But on that side, all obstruction is taken away, and he sweeps serenely over a deepening channel into an infinite sea. This talent and this call depend on his organization, or the mode in which the general soul incarnates itself in him. He inclines to do something which is easy to him and good when it is done, but which no other man can do. He has no rival. For the more truly he consults his own powers, the more difference will his work exhibit from the work of any other. His ambition is exactly proportional to his powers. The height of the pinnacle is determined by the breadth of the base. Every man has this call of the power to do somewhat unique, and no man has any other call. The pretense that he has another call, a summons by name and personal election, and outward sign that mark him extraordinary are not in the role of common men. His fanaticism. So you have a specific purpose that if you do not fill it, nobody else will. You were put here to live a specific life with your specific set of talents. That if you don't do it, nobody else will. You are vitally important to our existence and the evolution of all mankind. But only if you play your role. If you play somebody else's role, you'll fail. And you'll produce a bunch of crap that doesn't matter. If you try to live up to somebody else's ideal of you, you'll fail. If you consult your inner power, if you consult what you know in your heart that you're supposed to be and do and become, you will become that because you were made to do that. That is the purpose of your life, period. Here's what I also know. If you're drunk or high, it'll never happen. And it's a waste of a life. Does it sadden me? Not really. Should it sadden you? Probably. Because I've gotten to this place in my life. I'll share another chicken story. I got to this place in my life where I don't judge right and wrong, up or down. Things just are. So I learned this through an experience I had. My wife came out to the, it was before we had lived on the farm yet, but the chickens were already out there. My wife went out to the farm to put the chickens up, and there was a mass slaughter. There were chickens laying all over the place. There were found chickens at the end of the driveway, chickens over there, chickens over there. There were five chickens all with their heads missing. And the other ones were all freaked out and scattered all over the property. And we were missing one. And so she gathered them all up, gathered up the dead ones and closed the other ones up in the coop. And so we started researching what hunts this way. And what we came to the realization of is that it was probably a fox. Because what foxes do when they hunt is they go and they bite the heads off as many of them as they can. And then they take the one that they want, and then they come back later, and they bury the rest of them so they can get them later. Well, we didn't let them. We cleaned them up before it had a chance to get them. Well, our neighbor said that they had seen that there was a foxhole on the other side of their property over by the lake that they had seen what appeared to be a mama. And also learned that they usually have a couple cubs. And so, you know, I started thinking about it, and I was like, man, I really wish I would have been there to stop that. And so let's say I was out there that day and I had my rifle. And I shot that mom. I would have saved my chickens. But then what would have happened to her cubs? They would have died. So the mama gets one of my chickens. Her babies live, but my chickens die. So who's right? The answer comes in the perspective. Are you the fox or are you the chicken owner? There's no right, there's no wrong, there just is. It's all a matter of the perspective. So whenever anything happens negative in my life, I look at it and say, is it good, is it bad? I don't know. Time always shows me whether it was good or bad. Time always shows me the purpose of the experience after I get through the experience. So the fact that you're in here, I don't know if it's good or if it's bad. I know that it's happening. And so just have the experience and see where it takes you. And when you're out there, if you do leave here and you relapse, have that experience. Watch it. If you're able to access that inner space where you can be aware of what is really going on inside of you and around you, you're winning, whether the experience is good or bad. I'll close with this because I just have always liked this. This is the tail end of what used to be in the big book at the end of the story called Our Southern Friend. I don't really believe that the guy wrote it because it doesn't really sound like the rest of the story, but that it's pretty poetic, so I'm going to read it. Sensuality, drunkenness, and worldliness satisfy a man for a time, but their power is a decreasing one. God produces harmony in those who receive His Spirit and follow its dictates. Today, as I become more harmonized within, I become more in tune with all of God's wonderful creation. The singing of the birds, the sighing of the wind, the patter of the raindrops, the roll of thunder, the laughter of happy children add to the symphony with which I am in tune. The heaving ocean, the driving rain, autumn leaves, the stars of heaven, the perfume of flowers, music, a smile, and a host of other things tell me of the glory of God. There are periods of darkness, but the stars are still shining, no matter how black the night. There are disturbances, but I have learned that if I seek patience and open-mindedness, understanding will come, and with it, direction by the Spirit of God. The dawn comes, and with it more understanding, the peace that passes understanding, and the joy of living that is not disturbed by the wildness of circumstances or people around me. Fears, resentments, pride, worldly desires, worry, and self-pity no longer possess me. Ever increasing are the number of true friends. Ever growing is the capacity for love. Ever widening is the horizon of understanding. And above all comes a greater thankfulness to and a greater love for our Father in heaven. Guys, I was trying to reflect this morning whether or not there have been more memorable people that have sat in this room than maybe there are today. But as a group, as a collective, the energy that I've received from you guys is probably the most attentive, concentrated group that I've experienced here in the last 4 years. So you should commend yourselves for that, because you're the reason that that is. Negativity has the ability to start a forest fire. Positive thoughts and actions and existence spread. I've hardly seen very much negative interactions between people, other than the other day when people were arguing over the proper way to wipe down the tables. That was actually pretty entertaining for me. But like, you guys have a good group of people here. Your chances in this room with these people is probably greater than any other group that I've seen at the Bridges of Hope. There's probably more people that will actually stay clean and sober out of this group than in the past that I've seen. And that's awesome, and it's good. And you know, it's often very tough for the two of us to sit up here with a group of people that really don't want to be here. And there's some of you. We see it. It's okay. None of you are as champion as the guy that used to sit. I think it was the first time we were here. There was a guy that sat in that seat that stared at some point on the wall literally for the entire weekend. This dude had this, like, meditation that was, like, off the hook, like just laser focus, and he didn't hear a damn word we said that he was aware of. And you know what, when I inquired from him to Bill, How is that guy? He's like, oh, he didn't make it for shit. He went out of here and he ended up in jail like that. Good for him. He succeeded. He got exactly what he wanted. He didn't listen to a word we said, and he got the result of nothing that we said. So, but you guys are different, and you're going to make it. And I believe that. So, thank you for the attentiveness. Thank you for being here. Thank all the people that you're with. Seriously, thank them. Thank you for being supportive of my recovery. Because you can't do it alone. It's impossible. Tarek's and my network is 10, 20 deep. And it changes. And we lose some people. And some new people come in and replace them. But we're never alone. And you guys aren't either. And thank you so much for this weekend. Thank you.